Welcome to episode 34 of Mac and Cheese. I'm Mac Mail.
And Graham Hicks.
And today we're going to try a slightly different format than we've done for our previous episodes. We're going to tackle a few topics.
But let's give them an index first. We'll start with The Oilers and the Rush. We move on to Galleria, which we can argue about.
Yep.
The waterfall and the high-level bridge and lights, and whether you have electrical shortages when you have waterfalls. And finally, Mike Ross's piece on the zombie apocalypse, which very amusingly caught fire right across Canada.
Just blew right up that topic.
Do, 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 do. You know what that's from?
No, what's that from?
That's from that CBC show. What's it called, Adam?
As It Happens.
As it happens.
They always intro with okay, this. Got
so,
it.
So there you go.
There you go. I like that. So first up, Oilers and Rush.
Sort of a semi-happy note to end off a pretty dismal season with the Ryan Smith retirement, which was done very well by the Oilers. I mean, congrats to all concerned there. Isn't he an interesting character that he does personify Edmonton, that of all these dudes that take their $20 trillion in salaries and they don't reinvest in the community. All that money goes straight out of here and goes to wherever they're going after they retire. But Ryan's an Edmonton guy, and he came back because he wanted to be here. He wanted to raise his kids here.
Edmontonian through and through.
Yeah, I wonder what he'll do now. They'll give him a job at the Oilers of some sort, I'm sure. They always do if you're part of the club you're in.
All former Oilers have a job there for life. Isn't that how it works? That's what it seems like.
I think it seems to be this way. Is it most NHL teams or is it just a few? But these guys sure do loudly and proudly take care of their own.
Yeah, absolutely. You're in the family for life, I guess. No, it was great. It was a nice send-off. He's one of those guys who's not afraid to show emotion, and he was, you know, bawling his eyes out on the ice. I was worried for him that it might have gone on a little too long, but everybody in the stand seemed to be loving it.
Yeah, and it was so cute, too, with his little son wearing his jersey with the little captain on it. But that was rather inspired, you know?
The cute part was when they'd cut to his daughter, and she'd be crying. And it's like his wife was the only one who held it together. It's like somebody has to, I guess, right?
Too bad he didn't. Did he? Now, he tied that record for power play goals? Or
I think he
fell
tied
one
it.
Short.
He tied it. Yeah.
Well, his name's in the record book. That's good. That's good. But we'll be seeing him around doing things the next 10, 15, 20 years, right? And meanwhile, what about them Rush? You were just telling me before we started the show that you're a big Rush lacrosse fan and that after how many years of losing records, you've been vindicated.
My brother and I have been fans since the very first season. We went to the first game, had season tickets the first year, and have been to almost every home game this year.
Wow.
I like it. It's fun. And it's great to go see an Edmonton team that's winning.
Do you?
Right? I mean, you go, and there's a pretty good chance you're going to. We set a new record this year for win streak, so we opened the season with 14 straight wins, which is the best start ever for the National Lacrosse
League. Why do you like this game so much?
It's just, you know, what people like about hockey is it's quick and it's high energy, and lacrosse is very much that way, but with an element of, you know, in the stands anyway, fun thrown in, like they play music and you're encouraged to, you know, boo and jeer the opposing team, and it's a pretty good show.
I do hope our fun owner of the Rush, the fellow who owns all those RVs, I can't remember his name, RV stuff.
Bruce Urban,
good guy, and he's sunk so much money into it. It'd be real nice if he starts to get just a little return on the investment. So,
oh, totally. It looks promising for our first playoff game this year, right? So home
so
playoff
everyone
game.
Go and just support Bruce Urban in his passion. How's that?
Yeah, one other thing I want to mention quickly before we leave the topic. I saw on Oilers Nation a post a little while ago that Jason Greger did, and he was talking about the banners in the stands at Rexall Place. Mm-hmm. And they retired Jimmy Quinlan's number on the Rush this year. He was their star player for a long time. But they only put the banner up during Rush games. It's not there the rest of the time. And his point was we should maybe think about celebrating success on the Rush of the Oil Kings and the Oilers all the time, not just when, you know, those teams are playing. And I just want to say I support that. I'd love to see Quinlan's number up there all the time.
That's a real interesting debate. I'd have to think about it a bit. The only trouble is, just the last thought on that, you put his name up, but only 5% of the people that go recognize it or know what it's about.
Well, it could be a good way to promote it to some of those other fans, right?
You know, you're always such a homer. Every time you like something, you're always all gung-ho for them. That's good.
All right. Okay, let's move on. Well, on to something I don't like, then.
How come you got this bee in your bonnet about the Galleria?
Topic number two, Galleria. every time somebody writes something new about it, it's just another reason to not like the project.
Okay, well, quickly review what it is.
So the gallery is this proposal by the Kipnises to build this billion-dollar arts facility over near the CN Tower, near the Royal Alberta Museum. Would be home to a bunch of new theaters as well as an office tower and educational space for the University of Alberta. So that's kind of the idea. And it's called the Galleria because it has this central feature, which is like a covered courtyard or something like that. Mm-hmm. In the middle.
And the theaters are going to be a ballet, a place for the ballet and the opera to have their own home.
Yeah, this is essentially a home for the opera. Irv and Diane Kipnis have been huge supporters of the opera for a long time. And
they are, by the way, they're just incredibly wealthy, very successful businessman in town who is a very good philanthropist.
And he's done a great job in the city, yeah.
And this gives to a lot of causes. They want to be their great legacy.
Yeah, but that's part of it. It's like you and I had talked about this in a previous episode. Is it just you want to get your name on a building? Surely there's a better way to leave a legacy. But my main issue with the project, and I'd love to hear your thoughts because you seem to have changed your mind a little bit, is this the way we want to build a city? Kind of build a billion-dollar project here and one over here and not stop and think, how is that going to impact everything that's going on? Can we really afford the arena project and this right next to each other? When we have the CRL that we don't know if we're going to get the revenue from that to pay off, and we've got the office tower now that the city's filled, it just seems like an awful lot that hasn't been properly thought through.
Okay, here's the counterpoints. I think if you go back in any city's history, that serendipity plays a huge part, that when the private sector is willing to step up and fund a third of a something, you then kind of jump on it. I mean, it almost becomes, okay, we had this vision, but visions are dynamic, visions are living. And when the capital becomes available, you know, remember before I had my problems basically because I felt that Irv Kipnis, as a developer, has nurtured a very, very good relationship with City Council.
Yeah.
So when he came to Council, he got a bit of a gentle ride, shall we say. But then the more I thought about it, yeah, we got some theater space now, but how often does the opportunity come along that you're going to have philanthropists who are willing to say, look, we're prepared to put in, I don't know where this $1 billion slice sprung up from, but
I think it's their number, actually. I think they're talking about the overall cost of the project.
Okay, so maybe they're just being realistic. But there was talk that they were quite willing. They're putting in 40 or 50 mil themselves, and that they were able to say, we can raise $300 million for this not-for-profit foundation to run the thing. Now, how do you look a gift horse of that magnitude in the mouth? And when we have a chance, I'm contradicting myself. I know.
Yeah.
But the more I think about it, the more I think you got to take advantage of things when they come up. And yes, you know, maybe we don't really need an opera house in the near future, but by golly, to get one built is certainly a nice little mark. And to have a few more theaters, we are hopefully going to keep growing. You have the opportunity to get this stuff in place. You have the opportunity to create. It seems that development begets development development. And sometimes there's no rhyme or reason, or you take out the magnificent urban plan that's so structured and everything's going to happen the right thing. But, I mean, we're building the arena because the owner of the Oilers said, I want a new arena. Right? I mean, that's what pushed that. I don't know if it was on anybody's real radar until the Oilers.
Well, there was
really
the report the mayor did and stuff like that. But
yeah, but that was all lining up with.
On the Galleria project, though, I mean, one way to look at it is that it's not that they're coming to the table with a whole bunch of money and saying, Mr. City, would you put in a little? They're actually coming to the table and saying, Mr. City, would you take on all of the upfront risk of this project? And if it goes downhill, you're on the hook, Mr. City, not us. That's essentially what they're looking for, $50 million from the city to start before they go anywhere else and do anything else. I mean, they're asking the city basically to front load the risk of a private development. That's
but
essentially
they are
what they're looking
up
for.
$300 million, and it's private, but it's not for profit.
Well, in theory, this trust they propose would generate some revenue for the arts, you know,
in perpetuity,
down the line. But.
And it's also very creative, and they're saying, look, we can, you know, this is very business creative, saying the office tower itself, it will not go, those profits will not go off into somebody's dividends or pockets. It will go back to covering off the cost of running the Galleria. And of course, you know, I'm not stupid. I didn't fall off the turnip truck, as they say. I'm sure it's going to end up costing $10 million a year or so for the city. But what do we get? You know, we get a lovely aesthetically pleasing, beautiful new theaters, and a new sense of culture and a new sense of vibrancy that couples up with the hockey boys next door, the critical mass might become something very, very exciting and interesting and entertaining.
Yeah, I mean,
you know me. I'm happy putting in infrastructure.
I'm happy to get rid of empty lots and parking lots, obviously downtown. But there's so many things about this that just does not feel right. The fact that the pedway they want to build is three times more than any pedway we've ever built, even accounting for inflation. The fact that the province is going to be the tenant, and then today actually we're hearing that maybe they're not the tenant, so there's all this secrecy about their big tenant. The fact that the U of A won't get involved unless the pedway is built. The real sort of strange connection to the museum. Like, there's just so many things that are unclear. I mean, even in the report that goes to council, you know, asking for the upfront money to make this thing happen, there's like a laundry list of risks that will fall onto the city if it goes nowhere, right?
There's also the fact that this thing can be staged over 25, 30 years.
Well, maybe that's the way to look at it, because they're really pushing for a decision today.
Well,
right?
Maybe we push for a decision. Yeah, we're in ultimately four. But, I mean, look at Century Park in the south side. But when it was first announced, it was going to be like, woo-wee, 10 apartment towers and this and that. And it was going to be a modern utopia.
Yep.
Well, here we are 6 years later, and they did phase one, you know, one and a half towers and a couple others, but it's not going to get done for 50 years. So
I know the city's taken on risk in other locations, like Blatchford, obviously. And
okay, do we walk away from a promise by people that can deliver of $300 million towards a not-for-profit arts facility?
Well, I'm not saying we should just throw up our hands and walk away entirely, but I don't like the ultimatum to council to give us a decision today to put in $50 million, which, by the way, you may lose half of, no questions asked. Like, that feels a little uneasy to me as a taxpayer. And if I was on council, it would make me feel uncomfortable too. Mm,
Daryl Cates did a pretty good job of it.
He did, but they also went back and forth for like 3 years on that thing, right? They finally got to an agreement that everybody was happy with.
Yeah, but they all do. I mean, you know, the Citadel took years, the Art Gallery took years, you know, the Windspear took years. So maybe
we'll continue to be talking about this one for years. Who knows?
Yeah, I think it'll happen, just albeit very slowly, and will unfold. And I suspect that the $300 million is perhaps a bit utopian, that it'll be closer to $100 million. But again, when you got that kind of money and you got a chance to build something enduring,
hard to say no.
How deep do you look in the horse's mouth?
Yeah. All right, topic number three.
Topic number three. Farewell, farewell to the old waterfall. It was kind of cute. It didn't make much sense, but it was that crazy Peter Lewis, who's, you know, the madcap artist, who I quite love dearly, but he truly is Alice in Wonderlandish. And he came up with this great idea a long time ago. It was tied in with some centennial or something, right?
I don't remember.
The high-level waterfall.
Yeah.
Right? But that was before we all became an anti-state and we worried about too much chlorophyll in the water or not enough chlorophyll in the water, or by golly, someone might get wet and catch a cold and sue the city. You know what I mean?
Yep. Yeah. Risk aversion, right?
And it was just kind of funny how this whole thing has just kind of gently went downhill, right? And no one really took care of maintenance. It's the same old stories. We talk about all the arts and all that. Yay, we got $10 million to build it. But you're going to should be putting
going?
In yeah should
yeah.
be putting in a quarter to half mil a year in just upkeep. Oh well, we didn't budget for that.
Yeah.
So here we're
we didn't budget for new environmental regulations that are going to cause us to have to update it or something, right?
So it's probably going to go by the boards.
Well, it is now. I think right, council's decided we're not putting any money into it. Everybody this week was tweeting about how the taps have been turned off, but like, haven't they been turned off since, I don't know,
I can't
2005
remember the last time
or something?
On.
Like, they haven't been on for a while, right? So
because they're scared that the chlorine from like a 10-second splash in the river was going to do, oh, well, okay, whatever.
But now we're getting lights.
Now we're getting lights.
Yeah.
Now, I think there was a secret agenda here. I think they said, what if we put on lights and we turn on the water and all the water like goes over the lights like in the bathtub, and all of a sudden they start to short and get all kinds of problems. So maybe they're just killing one before they start the other.
Well, I would hope that they're weatherproofing those lights, as compelling as a theory as that might be.
What do you think of the argument that the lights could be a bit of a you know, man's domination over the environment. I feel a bit, half of me is kind of like is like a hippie granola who really just loves the peace and quiet of the River Valley. Mm-hmm. Actually, I adore the peace and quiet of the River Valley, and I love it as the contrast to the city around it. And I think that's one of its great selling points. Absolutely. I am a little nervous about this kind of thing. Doesn't it kind of disregards the separation, the harmony between the two? On the other hand, it's in the urban city, it's downtown, we've already got the LRT going across. What's a few lights going to do?
Yeah, I mean, I'm cautiously optimistic about the lights. I think it could look really good. I'm a little worried after seeing the ATB tower downtown that it'll just come off looking really tacky or something, right? Like, I mean, I can see that one from my balcony, and it's just from my condo, actually, and it doesn't look very attractive, and I worry about the lights.
Those little stem lights around the sides of the ATB building?
Yeah. And I know they can do cool colors with, like, different events, but I think it very quickly goes... It's so different than everything around it. It looks out of place, and I'm worried that's what will happen to the bridge, too.
I'm also wondering, can we put enough money into it to make it fairly spectacular, or is it going to be like a Christmas tree that... you know, it was kind of like a ho-hum Christmas tree as opposed to a really multi-splendored one.
Yeah.
So, and if it's ho-hum, like if they all come on and twinkle and looks nice but doesn't do much. Anyhow, I shouldn't be so negative.
Well, hopefully it'll turn out.
Mr. Dave Mowat from the ATB has done a great campaign. And
got a lot of people engaged. Yeah.
Though I do wish that they'd tear apart the high-level bridge one more time and make it four lanes.
That's not going to happen. Well, we should see the lights. I think everybody's plan is July, right, for Canada Day is kind of the idea. So
this Canada Day?
That's my understanding, yeah.
They think the city can move that fast?
Wow. Well, it's EPCOR, so maybe they think EPCOR is going to move that fast.
That's true. That's true. Yeah. And last one we wanted to talk about, which I thought was just a good yuck, my old friend Mike Ross, that I once hired to work at the Edmonton Sun and now does his... what's his blog piece
I think this
called?
Is a different Mike Ross, actually, right?
Is it really? No.
Yeah. This isn't Mike Ross from Gig City. This is a younger, geekier Michael Ross.
You know, that flummoxes me because the style of the piece was very much the Mike Ross that I know.
Right.
Like, stylistically, I would have sworn it was.
Yeah.
Oh, well.
It's a different Michael Ross, but...
Yeah. He comes up with this idea
to...
He sees something about zombie apocalypses elsewhere and says, if you were a Canadian, and what city, if there's going to be a zombie invasion, what city's got the best chance of surviving?
And then he came up with a methodology to figure it out, and he ranked the cities and gave them a score of how likely or least likely they are to survive. It's quite compelling.
And Edmonton loved it because we were at the top of the list.
Number three, I think, yeah. And Ontario cities were mostly down at the bottom of the list. So.
But the coolest thing was the way it caught fire. It did go viral, eh?
Yeah, it was on Strombolopolis. It was in every newspaper. It's one of those things where the newspaper in your city or your town can pick it up and say, hey, somebody paid attention to us, right?
And you know what happens, too, is there's some guy in the corner of whatever department it is, right? And their job is to go through all this stuff and find the unusual stuff, right? Oh, this is a good one. You could just see it right across the country. They'd rip that one out of the pile of 300 and say, you know, here's a good comedy piece, right?
Yep.
And that's the kind of thing that makes the front page once in a while. It's just kind of, you know, slightly wacky. And
the last 5 minutes of every newscast, right?
Yeah.
It's always like that funny story is the end of the newscast.
And we end with cheese. I'm not sure how funny cheese is, but because we're mac and cheese. And today I bought a Trappist beer cheese from the cavern.
Trappist beer. I've never heard of that.
Made by these Belgian monks who are either drunk from brewing their beer or really eating expensive cheeses. I think these monks have got something going for them.
Let's give it a go.
This is a beer washed cheese from Belgium. And it's supposed to be quite tasty.
It's a soft cheese.
I said to the lady at the cavern, whose name I can never remember, just give me something totally unusual. So.
Well, it's definitely unusual. I don't know if it's the power of suggestion, but you get that hint of, like, beer aftertaste.
Are you going to start doing Gregorian chants?
I think you're safe.
And as we leave, we'll do the exit theme from As It Happens. Dun, dun, do-do-do, do-do-do, do-do.
There you go. Nice close. I was going to put sound effects, but I don't have to anymore. We'll just get you to do them. Check us out at macandcheese.ca. Thanks for listening.